This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Let's talk about how trade negotiations and tariffs are impacting the global economy at large. Paul Christopher is joining us, head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute, based in St. Louis. Paul, always good to have you on the show. Let's begin with the back and forth here on trade. It seems like every time we get a little movement, maybe there's a little bit of a setback here. What do you make of the latest back and forth?
Yeah, the latest back and forth and last week's as well confirm for us that the two sides really haven't made a deeper deal than simply trading Chinese purchases of agricultural products for a few small concessions on intellectual property protections from the Chinese. The way they're going about it is that the Chinese spokesman will say something, and then the next day the President Trump will deny it. It's almost like they're trying to negotiate with each other in a public setting by means of statements or tweets. That tells us that they really haven't made a very deep set of agreements for this first phase. We think it's really just a truce we're in right now, much as we've seen in June and July, and then we saw in January through April. We think the market could be set up here for some disappointment, some volatility in the coming weeks.
Well, and that might be because if we're seeing, as you're saying, really no resolution on the horizon, this could go on a while.
Yes, the two real big issues have to do with the U.S. is afraid of Chinese spying on the U.S., and the U.S. is afraid of the Chinese becoming technologically more sophisticated than we are, and the Chinese, in turn, are afraid that the U.S. is going to try to withhold technology from the Chinese and make them sort of work harder for it. Those are big rocks to move, and it's a strategic competition. It's not going to be something that's resolved very quickly.
Let's talk about jobless claims. They rose to a five-month high. Is it something to be concerned about?
No, not really, not yet. But we are late in the economic expansion. Remember, an expansion is not like a hockey game or a football game. It's more like a baseball game. It's not timed. So you could have an indicator like the unemployment claims suddenly move a little bit higher. It's not necessarily the beginning of a recession, but we do see a lot of signs out there that things are getting a little long in the tooth, and we're going to have to monitor those going forward. We think that will also be recession concerns, a source of some anxiety as the 2020 year approaches.
Yeah, because there's still people able to find work, but if that changes, then you got some more significant problems.
That's right. We're watching for firms laying people off. We're watching for problems with credit, the firms that maybe can't pay their bonds off or their bank loans. We're not seeing any big increases in delinquencies and defaults just yet, but that is typically a signal that we're getting closer to a recession once those indicators start to rise.
Thanks so much. Always good analysis. Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Coming up just ahead, Apple has successfully made its case to receive tariff exemptions from U.S. regulators. Apple doing a pretty good job of navigating the tricky waters of U.S.-China trade wars. We welcome Jeff Kilberg, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Jeff, before we talk about exactly what Apple's doing, just talk about how important it is to a company like Apple that they navigate this well.
It's critical, Cisco, and it's really interesting to see they have so much exposure, not only just to the Chinese market from a consumer perspective, but it's a lot of where their parts are being manufactured. So this is a very critical dance that CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, has been doing. He's been doing a tremendous job.
And so tell us now what they're doing here to try to navigate, specifically when it comes to the trade war and the tariffs. What has Apple been able to do?
Well, it goes back to August, Cisco, when he had dinner with President Trump, and he must have really poured some nice wine or really fired up a nice steak, because they had a great dinner, and out of that dinner, in the wake of that dinner, he was able to receive some exemptions. And the Apple CEO, Tim Cook, received these exemptions, and it's really helped the stock price. The stock price is up 70% year to date. But what's really interesting is that he was able to negotiate or compromise with President Trump, and he promised to spend $1 billion. Yes, it has a B on it, $1 billion in their plant down in Texas, in Austin, Texas. They're going to be making the Mac Pro. So by moving some of that manufacturing domestically, that really made President Trump consider these exemptions. He got some of the exemptions, and now you're just seeing more and more potential for jobs being created domestically. So there's kind of a bromance between Apple CEO Tim Cook and Donald Trump.
Yeah, and that, I mean, when it comes down to it, you're talking about jobs, you're talking about the U.S. economy. I mean, really ends up being a significant deal to be able to do this. You got to have a lot of juice to be able to get this done.
You do, but this is a very significant deal, and hopefully it'll pursue and convince other CEOs to take the same course, because we need more jobs domestically. We need to bring back some of our manufacturing jobs, but it'll be interesting to see. It hasn't been declared yet, but the next week or two, President Trump and Apple CEO Tim Cook will be taking a victory lap in Austin, Texas. So that'll be very televised scene of how a CEO, because remember, President Trump put together a tech CEO board back in 2017, and all the tech CEOs left. They didn't want to meet with President Trump in D.C. anymore. They didn't feel like they were making progress. And all of a sudden, we have a real example, a real life example to show that we're bringing jobs back. We're switching manufacturing to Austin, Texas. And I think this victory lap will be quite celebrated by the American workers.
Yeah, this is the Mac Pro, right? MacBook Pro that they're going to build there or are building.
That's
there.
Right. Yeah. They're moving manufacturing to there, and everyone has some touch to Apple. I know I have an Apple phone. I also have a MacBook Pro. So this is just exciting. And I think that's why you're seeing some of the U.S.-China trade tariff conversations. It's in the news. It's in the market every day. But this is one silver lining on how Tim Cook was able to navigate through a pretty tumultuous time.
Now, this maybe is a blueprint for other CEOs, I would imagine, on how, if you're going to be a CEO for a while, you're going to deal with Republican administrations, Democrat administrations. You got to be able to move back and forth with the differing parties and the differing personalities if you want to thrive.
Yeah, I think that's right. And this could be a template that they create and reutilize. But it'll be really interesting to see, because at the end of the day, we really need the administration, President Trump specifically, to stick the landing on this phase one deal. That's what the market has been so excited about. That's why we're at all-time highs. That's why this is the sixth week in a row of the S&P 500 moving higher. So we need some type of ink on a piece of paper articulating the fact that this phase one deal between U.S. and China of a trade tariff deal will come to fruition. And that's further going to help Apple CEO Tim Cook and his stock.
Yeah, until you get there, until you get it actually on paper, it's just talk, right? It's just back and forth. There's really nothing for you to move on.
Yeah, but price doesn't lie. Look at the stock market. You know, it continues to be at all-time highs. So there's a lot of investors, a lot of institutions convinced that there is a trade tariff, at least a phase one deal coming. But I go back to Apple being up 70% year-to-date. Just about everyone I know in the Chicagoland area has some exposure in their stock portfolio to Apple. So this is super exciting. I congratulate Tim Cook for having to go to President Trump, and it's probably not the easiest dinner to kiss the ring. But nonetheless, he got a deal done, and he's being rewarded for it.
Yeah, he did whatever was necessary. Yeah. Jeff Kilberg, thanks for being with us. Jeff is CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Up next, has the time come to embrace Twinkies for breakfast? We'll tell you about it.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Host and hostess are teaming up for a new twist on the iconic snack cake Twinkies. Twinkies for breakfast. Let's get the scoop. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, what are they doing here?
Well, Cisco, let me give you a caveat. I happen to love Twinkies. I'm one of those strange people who absolutely love Twinkies. So what they've done is they've now made a Twinkie cereal, same shape, same taste, and they're going to be able to buy it in Walmart only. It's going to start in December, about $4 a box of cereal, but I'm not sure it's going to work.
Well, tell me why.
Well, number one, the trend in cereals has been declining, breakfast cereals, even though 285 million Americans eat breakfast cereals. We've really moved away from those sugar-coated sweet cereals, and especially parents. So when we look at the nutrition on this particular cereal, a serving is 180 calories, 6 grams of saturated fat, 135 milligrams of sodium, and 16 grams of sugar. And everybody recommends that breakfast cereals should have 10 grams of sugars or less. We're also seeing retailers around the country, like Raley's in Northern California, move those sugar-coated cereals to the bottom shelf and actually put a big sign on it that says high in sugar. So the trend is really against this, and frankly, I think it's going to be a baby boomer promotion because baby boomers really love Twinkies. I'm not sure millennials or Generation X does as much. So I I think it's going to be a flash in the pan. I think it'll come out, it'll sell well, but what they are doing that's correct is targeting it just at Walmart, because the Walmart customers are less health conscious than other customers, say, at Mariano's.
And is there also, I guess, maybe something to this, that anyone who would want Twinkies for breakfast isn't really all that worried about the sugar content?
Exactly. Absolutely. Whether if you're eating Twinkies now, having it for breakfast is just an extension of the brand. But the question is, how many people are really going to do that?
Yeah, no one really looking at the Twinkie label. It's not what they're concerned with.
Not even close.
So, but good for Walmart. I mean, this is exclusive. It's, I guess, at least something they can push.
It is. And again, keep in mind that what we're seeing, we just heard it yesterday, Dean Foods filing bankruptcy. Milk consumption is down in the country. And what you find is breakfast cereals go along with milk. Not a lot of people are having, you know, goat milk or the nut-based milks in their breakfast cereals. So it's a declining market. It's a declining milk market. You've got aging baby boomers who are probably going to buy it just as a hoot for them to taste. But long term, I have to question whether or not this cereal will be on the shelf in a year from now.
Yeah, we'll certainly be paying attention. Thank you, Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, talking about the plans for a Twinkies cereal.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are trading lower today. To talk about it, Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors, LLC, based in New York. Jim, market's down slightly today. What are you seeing?
Well, a little bit of exhaustion after the significant increase you've had over the last few months. But the reason for the exhaustion and the excuse today to go down are skepticism about this phase one trade deal. It started Tuesday when Trump's speech before the Economic Club of New York. He was surprisingly hawkish when most people thought you were basically there. And then the rumors yesterday that the Chinese want all the tariffs removed, and we're saying all we're willing to do at this point is not impose any new tariffs. So I think the market is afraid that if phase one doesn't get done, that the trade and the tariffs will start to weigh on the economy during the balance of the year and next year, along with, of course, the public phase of the impeachment hearings, which are not confidence building.
Is this just a reminder to investors not to really do anything until they know what's going to happen with the China trade deal? Because it's just a roller coaster of information up and down.
Yeah, it's really, it's almost like trying to invest based on a black swan because you don't know what's going to happen. I would say at this point you can still go with the fundamentals. The economy is growing at, depending on who you talk to, between 1 and 2% in the fourth quarter. That should allow for a modest increase in profits. You've got the Fed out of the picture. Valuations reasonable, not cheap, but reasonable. And the fluff has come out of the new issue market where all these companies with rapidly growing revenues but losing money were able to come public. That's over. So based on the economics and the market fundamentals themselves, you should be able to make a little bit more progress in stock prices. But weighing against that are the corrosive effect of these hearings on the news night after night, and the uncertainty on the trade deal. You know, the Cisco numbers, when they came out today, he really attributed a lot of the disappointment to the fact that businesses are uncertain based on trade and pulling back on capital spending. So it really would be helpful. I think, you know, the Chinese want it, we want it, but it's a huge game of poker. And the complication is phase two is going to be even harder than phase one, but you can't get to phase two until you finish phase one. So that's the most important issue, I think, facing the market.
Yeah, let's talk about Cisco. I'm interested in your insight there. It's one of our story stocks today after the report, the stock down nearly 8% today.
Yeah, it's mainly some of it was due to competition, but if you listen to the CEO's interview, it's really a decline in business executive confidence based on uncertainty as regards trade, and I think, you know, they threw in a little bit of Brexit in Hong Kong on top of that, but I think trade is the fundamental. Look, the weakest part of the U.S. economy is capital investment. The consumer is powering through and will power through as long as they can. but you're not going to get an uptick in the growth rate of the economy without capital spending kicking in. And, you know, Cisco is telling you today that there's no clarity on that as we sit here today.
Another story stock is Walmart, which has been trading at records. It's down just a hair today, about a quarter of a percent. What do you think about what's going on with Walmart?
Well, industrially, they're doing just a wonderful job. Their online and their grocery business is doing exceedingly well, and people are ordering online and going into the stores to pick up, and that allows for impulse buying of non-grocery items. So Walmart is executing beautifully. You know, the stock is now 24 times earnings, so it's not a bargain. It's up a lot this year, but as an industrial story, they are really delivering the goods.
You know, in their e-commerce, what you just mentioned has been fascinating to me with Walmart, because it seems like an advantage that they have over Amazon. It's not necessarily that people don't want to go into stores. They just don't want to go there and look around and then find that store doesn't have what they want. So if they can order it online and go pick it up, it seems like a really convenient thing for consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an advantage over Amazon, but you know, you never count Amazon out. They're a creative powerhouse, but you'd have to say that of the traditional retailers, Walmart stands out number one as having met and successfully met the Amazon challenge so far. I guess Target is mentioned there also, but I think Walmart really stands out on its own. They invested a lot of money. You think about how many companies in different industries have become obsolete and gone belly up and out of existence due to the competition from e-commerce and Amazon. And, you know, Walmart's the opposite side of that story.
Yeah, sure has been. Thanks so much, Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors, LLC. Up next, Technology Thursday, are humans teaching computers to be racist?
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. Human biases are finding their way into artificial intelligence systems, and it could erode trust between people and machines that learn. Let's explain this now. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, let's begin with, when we talk about biases, what are we talking about here in regard to artificial intelligence?
Well, when it comes to AI or artificial intelligence, bias is basically speed. In other words, it sounds like an unusual linkage, but basically the idea is when you're browsing or when you're having a machine do work for you, AI can help. Google just launched something called BERT, B-E-R-T, which is an acronym, but basically it's an AI system that helps people or browsers predict, and the browser itself predict what's going to come next. So a bias is basically you can make up your mind, you can prejudge, you can be prejudiced on purpose, and you can judge in a good way what word comes next. Right. So you can predict meanings by looking at the first three words of a sentence if you've seen billions and billions of sentences, which is exactly the point of this system that Google has now launched. So it can predict what's coming next. But the predictions come from reading lots of stuff. In other words, people have jammed lots of language into the system, and that language itself is biased. In other words, if it's looking at old books, guess what? Old models where, you know, women don't matter in the workforce or women should stay home or something like that. Well, those books are going in there just as much as other stuff that could help us get sort of an even-handed view. In the end, bias is experience, and it's being fed into these AI systems.
And so does the AI, I mean, I guess maybe they can tweak the algorithm or something. I mean, does AI at all take into account how much material they're getting, whether it's new or old material? Can it possibly do that?
They can, but that's almost runs counter to the point of AI. In other words, AI is intended to go out there and learn. You teach it some basic patterns, and then it goes out on its own faster than any human can. That's the benefit, speed of learning. And, you know, artificial intelligence isn't exactly that. It's going out there on its own and learning from zillions and zillions of inputs. Can you control which inputs? To a degree, but the point of it is to go out there and get as much as it can. So what really is happening is it's vacuuming up historical biases, even as it vacuums up useful information.
And so what are the risks then? Google and other outfits are obviously really pushing forward with this. If you end up with AI that's racist, sexist, I mean, what ends up happening?
Well, you know what? If I'm going to be a pessimist, if I'm going to be a pessimist, I'm going to say that what happens is it perpetuates old myths and old problems. So you might see incremental bad stuff. What it really does is reinforce when somebody, say, browses for certain phrases, they're going to see certain associations, which are under the underlying idea there is bias. So the answer to your question is, look, if you ingest bad stuff will continue. Really what this is about is it won't necessarily send an airplane plummeting to the ground or a train off the tracks, but it will perpetuate myths and biases that are not good for us, you know, if you're looking at it clinically. And so that's the big challenge.
Is there any way to avoid this, or is it inevitable?
They're trying. You know, the scientists, the biggest challenge is scientists don't know what they've created. The speed of all this is just is almost impossible to calculate. So the result is you've got real challenges of trying to control the animal that you've unleashed. The good news, of course, is that it's helping you search. It's giving people, it's making machines smarter. It's helping them react more quickly. Cars don't drive into people as much as they used to if they're AI cars, because they are even just cars that sense other objects in the road because of AI. So good things can come, but the bias is really what they're trying to handle.
Well, we'll keep paying attention for sure. It's just fascinating technology. Thank you, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday, still to come, a double dose of technology Thursday, a new cyber attack called juice jacking. It could put your tablets and other devices at risk.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Holiday travel season just about here. Cybersecurity experts are warning people not to use public charging stations. You often find those at airports and other public spaces. Let's find out why. We're talking about something called juice jacking. Jerry Irvine is joining us, CIO of Prescient Solutions, member of the National Cybersecurity Task Force based here in Chicago. Jerry, what is juice jacking?
Juice jacking is way hackers can connect to your phone by using your USB power cable. So you know how you plug your phone into your computer, and it will not only charge the battery on your phone, but it will also allow you to transfer data from your phone to your computer. So what these hackers are doing is they're putting little chips or devices inside the USB port at the airports or the train station, wherever you're at, that will, as soon as you plug it into your phone, it'll copy all of your data down. So it'll copy your credit card information and your address books and all of your information. So it's important that when you go out to places, not only don't use their public Wi-Fi, but don't use these public USB charging ports.
So bring your own cable, right, and just find a place to plug that in?
No, you want to bring your own power adapter, you know, the plug. Plug it into the electricity and then use your USB cord to plug into that. Don't plug directly into any USB port that's out there. Now, there are other ways to do it as well. You can buy a USB cable that only does power. Basically, there's one little pin in that connects the data. So you can go out online and you can buy a power cable that doesn't allow data transfer. And they're usually about $5 or $6 as opposed to the $10 or $12 ones that allow you to connect to your computer.
Yeah, as we've had you on over the years, it pretty much sounds like connecting to anything that is public with your phone, tablet, your laptop, anything like that. There's just a lot of danger to it.
It's not suggested. You're exactly right. Anything that people have the ability to touch, they also have the ability to break or hack into. So you don't want to use those. And again, the way to do it is either use those portable battery packs, you know, bring that with you, plug into your own battery pack, plug into a wall jack, not a USB jack, or use a special cable that doesn't allow you to do data.
Yeah, unless you don't mind giving up your credit card information.
Yeah. You know, a similar note, if you're renting a car and you plug your USB cable into that car, all of your data can get transferred to that car. The next person who comes in or the car attendant can copy all your data down to their phone. So again, anything that's publicly accessible, you don't really want to use.
Jerry Irvine, always good to have you with us. Jerry is CIO of Prescient Solutions. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind to the time you want. We have a brand new pause and rewind function. It works both online and on the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.